Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Here we are. The Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office just filed a 9-page brief laying out in public for the first time exactly what they say David, D4VD, David Anthony Burke, did to Celeste Rivas Hernandez. Not a leak, not an unnamed source. Deputy DA Beth Silverman put her name on it, and what it describes isn't just an alleged murder, it's an alleged cover-up that prosecutors say started within minutes of Celeste's arrival at Burke's Hollywood Hills home and stretched on 4 months. Staged text messages, a fake name on Amazon orders, 3 trips to a remote highway in the middle of the night, and a teenage girl's body left to decompose in a Tesla parked just around the corner. We're going to go through all of it today. As promised, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us. And Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer, the podcast. Get it wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. As promised, I've been excited to have both of you on here to break all this down, because when this thing came out yesterday,
The emails flying back, because Tony forwarded us all the court docs last night. And I was like, oh my God.
I did a piece on it yesterday. I just read through it verbatim. And there's so many times I went through it. I'm like, Coffendaffer was right on that. Coffendaffer was right on this. Coffendaffer, because you really have called most of this for what it is. It really kind of has been Occam's razor on this one, where it's like, if it looks like it, it probably is. And it seems like it was.
But I'm gonna poke at you a little, Jen. I think it's even worse than you thought it was.
Could be.
Oh my God, he is horrible.
I mean, prosecutors say Burke texted Celeste's phone at 10:30 p.m. asking where she was. He was doing the classic, oh, I just killed her, but if I call her phone, it couldn't possibly be me, because I'm wondering where she is. That's my alibi. At least that's what the attempt was. They're calling it premeditative cover for the story. Let's start there, Jen, as we look at the initial blueprint here and what the prosecution is bringing. That's one of many. What stood out to you right away on this thing?
Well, I first want to say, Tony, that and to Robin, too, you know, humanity is good, and you two are so good. And even with all you see and have seen, unless you're knee deep in these violent crimes for 30 years in the muck,
yeah,
it you know, so I just want to say, to me, it's a testament to the human condition that sure. you all bring forward here. I wish I had that back.
I'm amazed that I don't know. Like I normally am pretty dark on this. I don't know why I didn't go that way with it. But
I was going with the age level. It was just hard to imagine, you know, again, with no priors and at that age level, again, and so here's just a great example of, and to your point, Jen, confirmation bias. You know, if you didn't spend 30 years looking at the horrendous things at all ages, you know, my confirmation bias isn't going to naturally bring me. Not that you had confirmation bias, you had reps in it. And for me, it was, I hadn't seen enough of morons in their teens and early 20s doing really, really horrendous things. Generally, that doesn't come out from the things I've seen until like Koberger age, you know, like we're talking mid to late 20s, early 30s for the super horrendous. And at that point, there's already some reps. There's some issues with law enforcement potentially or friends and family are seeing shit. There's an arc going on in there. But this was like zero to super stupid.
Yeah, super murderous. You know, as far as what stood out, certainly the luring, even though I think he'd have to lure her, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, to a degree. You know, the pregnancy thing, the pregnancy slash abortion thing, that was something that we had actually talked about.
Yeah. And
I don't know if you remember, but it would have been surprising for that not to be in the layout of all of this, honestly. Mm-hmm. People were surprised about the abortion thing, thinking she needs permission. In California and in several states, but certainly in California, and I looked up the law, there is absolutely zero requirement that you have a elder sign off on anything, any minor, 12, 13, whatever, and there's no duty to report. So you can get an abortion at will.
Wow.
Yeah. There is a lot of things in here that make you go, how did they pull this off? How did they pull that off? One of the things that stood out to me a bit was him traveling and I guess allegedly taking her out of the country on some of his trips. Again, she's missing, but kind of not missing at the same time. International travel with a minor. You're not her parent. Getting on airplanes, getting off airplanes. I'm guessing they're not necessarily flying a private jet across the ocean. There's security checkpoints, things of that nature that are checked to make sure you're with who you're supposed to be with. And I guess it just show that just a quick nod of, yes, this is who I'm supposed to be with is all it takes to do this? I mean, I don't know. I mean, these red flags that I would have as a parent if I were to think, if my daughter, who's the same age, were to be abducted and somebody's going to try and get out of the country with her, it's pretty easy to get on a flight, I guess, and get out of the country without anybody really double checking a whole lot, as long as she nods and says, I'm going along with it. I mean, I guess that's what I'd be taking out of this.
Yep, that's exactly, you know, nothing. Unfortunately, everything's pretty porous, I think, unfortunately, when it comes to minors. You know, and could she have had, obviously she had a passport.
Yeah.
But anybody can get a passport.
The thing that got me with the passport and everything, though, because one thing that keeps coming up a little bit is people saying, well, if she never told anyone her age, yeah, but if she's traveling, she's got a passport and it's good. People are going to notice. There's going to be a reaction when you hand a passport and you're that age to Customs and Border Patrol when you're crossing borders, inside, outside, upside down. You're going to get a pause. Then they're going to look around. I mean, I've been through it. I know you've been through them a lot. A lot of people have been through these things a lot. There should have been a pause. And it's not like she's going to be alerting herself because she's there voluntarily. She wants to be there. But again, it's going to alert everyone in that entourage that, yes, she is that age. She is underage. So there's no excuses on that. And I know people keep harping on her family and what they didn't do to try to find her. But at the same time, I keep coming back to his. Where were his? You know, because he is a very, very young person and with zero guardrails going on. And I saw that she met his parents. where the hell are the questions? You know, Tony and I were talking this before we started, you know, because we have kids. You have kids. When your son starts dating someone, and even reverse it with your daughter, one of the first questions we continually ask with my son, especially my son, was, tell me about your girlfriend. The first question, how old is she? And if he didn't know, then you better damn find out. Then you ask, well, what grade is she in? What's she start? I mean, you start interrogating, making sure that their dumb mind isn't doing dumb things by accident. And in this case, there is zero people asking zero questions. So what's the probability of no one knowing? I'm telling you, it's next to zero.
Why?
What are your, my rant,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, what are your thoughts, Jen? I mean, as far as other folks being aware of what was going on here, I mean, we're just at the very beginning of all this now, knowing the gravity as to what all went on. Do you buy that there was no one that did they sell this well enough that she was this 19-year-old USC student and no one was the wiser except for David and Celeste?
There's no way I buy that. No way. Especially now that we know about the travel, there's no way. I didn't even buy it before. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that he bragged about it. I wouldn't doubt that we see testimony come out about that.
Yeah.
Nah, I think people knew, but it's in their best interest to say they didn't know.
Is it financial? Is that because he's the cash cow? So don't interrupt the cash cow. Because my next question is, what kind of human beings are okay with that? I mean, who's going, oh, well, that's okay, other than you're getting a payday? I don't know. I mean, to me, it's like that would be instant red flag, instant ick, instant what the hell's going on here. But it seems there's a lot of folks potentially that were not disgusted by this proposition.
Well, I always have said it's odd to me that this manager was on the stand for 3 days. It's basically unheard of.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he got a litany of all these questions that you're asking. How could you not know, you know, all the signs were there, blah, blah. And so, you know, now I'm sort of seeing more of the fact pattern that they were trying to get out of him and why it was taking so long. I'm sure he has all the excuses. As for the family, no, sorry, that wasn't a good impression. That was my cash cow moo. I do much better with sheep and goats. He's the cash cow, period. And you see these families just completely look away when it comes to who's bringing in the bucks.
The almighty green, man. So when I read the court doc, it looked like, I mean, they're really focusing on him and his actions. Do you think there's going to be, because again, it's hard to imagine not more people knowing, obviously, and then what you're just saying about, you know, the manager. Do you think there's going to be more people that we're going to see charges against or that were flipped? Because I thought there was going to be more at the beginning. But again, reading that doc last night, it's like, wow, they're really singling on him very, very thoroughly.
And I will say that's actually what I tweeted about this document. That's the one with Tony, when you asked that, that's what I should have said at first. The number one thing, the facts, that was pretty much for the most part expected, but I'm wondering why don't we hear or see anybody else mentioned? I just don't believe a rubber, you know, pool and then blood and helping dispose and the chainsaw. Was he smart enough to keep it that small? Was he smart enough?
There's not a lot of smart going on here, with so much of this. I said in my piece yesterday, I said the underlying line that's going to go through all this is dipshit, because, it really is. I mean, every single move here is idiotic. And he orders a shovel from Home Depot. He goes to Amazon and gets a burn cage and two chainsaws. I mean,
fake name to his own address.
It's comically bad. I mean, it's like, what's the worst things you can do right now to have someone look at you suspiciously or eventually when they start looking around the people of this missing girl? I know. Let's buy a chainsaw and a burn cage and a shovel. Gee, it just stupidity across the board. But then it also tells you something, too. There is no one, as Robin would say, there's no loving critic here saying, I don't know, maybe we should go to a garage sale and get that shovel. Maybe we shouldn't have a trail with us. It makes me wonder how much of this was 100% done by him and concealed by him, or the level of detail that we have in this doc also tells me there's a lot of people that's probably are telling stories on David.
Well, as I said, I'll be shocked if there's not somebody in cahoots in this. You just knocked me over with a feather. But this document certainly doesn't give us any inkling as anybody else. Nick squarely pinned on David.
Yeah. And here's the other thing that was, again, I'm sorry, I'm going to keep harping on the stupidity of this. So here's an individual and a group of individuals that are really, really into dark themes, obviously, from the lyrics to their lifestyle, from all these things they're doing. Isn't this the kind of people that actually might watch some true crime? That actually might? I mean, we hit this all the time about the stupid things that these people do and get caught doing, and all they'd have to do is watch even just one episode of any true crime, and it'd be like, oh, wow, I can do that a lot better. But these people in particular, this is what they're into, and they completely did the most dumb things on the face of the planet. I mean, you could go on and on. I mean, who doesn't like watch the Koberger case stuff and all the stupid, I mean, and he was kind of better at it, but they did worse than Koberger on like when Koberger was like hiding his evidence in baggies and putting in neighbor's trash. Yeah, like the FBI is not going to check the neighbor's trash. You're just going to check yours. I mean, you see that kind of stuff. But this is even worse because I still can't get over the Amazon and the fake name to the same address. Oh, it blows your head.
And the pool.
And the pool.
You know,
the body bags.
This guy did not watch true crime. This guy is true crime.
Yeah, great point.
He lives it, he breathes it, he dreams about it, he fantasizes about it. You see it in his lyric, you see it in his videos. That's what I think. I think he's probably never watched any true crime anything.
And Mark Fry's got a really good point here. I'll be honest, even with watching hours of these shows, I still don't think I can pull it off. Yes, because you're smart, Mark, because it's the same thing. As soon as you start going down the road of here's how I would mitigate this, and here's what they could do against it, you quickly come up with the conclusion, you really shouldn't be doing this because I'm going to be caught. And there you go. And therein lies the stupidity of this guy and many others.
Jen, the evidence in this is so overwhelming. There's so much of it. And maybe this is the answer to my question. Why did it take so long to get an arrest here on this guy? Because it looks like, holy shit, like any one of these things you could have locked him up for very early on in this. And it looks like some of this they did have early on, but they kept collecting. And they certainly came in with being what appears on the surface is a pretty rock solid case. But again, why wait so long to make the arrest?
Well, a few points on this. So this is what's interesting. The only reason that I was on this from day one, the only reason was KTLA. I was just doing my morning scrub and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's another poor girl dismembered, or I thought she was dismembered in the front trunk, right?
Yeah.
Nobody knew it was David. Nobody knew this was anything other than some other, just your average miscellaneous girl. And I remember a lot of my followers were like, Jennifer, why is this so special? I said, everyone's special, right? I was just pointing that out. But my point is, talking to your longevity of the case, they didn't even know who she was. Uh-huh. Then that shush tattoo, which was attached, by the way, it's the David finger that was cut. The other finger was cut for jewelry. But nevertheless, that shush, that's how she was identified to the mom. So now you've got your hands full because you have somebody that gone since April, found in September, months of decomposition. You're just trying to make heads or tail. Was this, a drug overdose? All the things we talk about, right? And then now finally you have her identified. You have all this. You've got the David aspect. There was so much to go through, though, in terms of video evidence. You know how we talked about that David's life was not in reality. His life was on a computer screen. Talks about it, his friends, his life. That's really what he did. Even his music, even though he was touring as of late, most all of his millions and millions of dollars are these streams that he does with his music. That's where he put all of his money. And so the Bureau, or not the Bureau, sorry, LA has their own amazing forensic lab. I don't think they use the Bureau. They had to go through all of that, though. They wanted a solid case because once you indict, the ticker starts. If somebody says, we're waiving our speedy trial, now you're hosed. So they needed to make sure they had all of that video and digital evidence lined out before they press charges. That's my opinion of why they waited so long.
Yeah, it makes sense when you think about how long it took to do the ID in the body and then the medical examiner because of the state of decomposition. I mean, so yeah, I mean, it lines up. It makes sense. But what a tremendous document they put together indicting him.
A lot of moving pieces. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear them. The brief, the document that just dropped in the David case doesn't just describe an alleged murder. It describes, a prosecutor say, was years of exploitation. David Anthony Burke allegedly met Celeste Rivas Hernandez when she was just 11 years old. By 13, prosecutors say they were in a S relationship. By 14, she was allegedly spending weekends at his Hollywood Hills home, traveling with him to Las Vegas, London, and Texas. And people in his circle reportedly believed she was 19 years old, a 19-year-old college student. She was actually in middle school in seventh grade. And every system that should have caught this allegedly did not catch this. Joining me to discuss, Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, and Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, as we continue to break this case down. Let's go here. After law enforcement told Burke directly that Celeste was a 13-year-old runaway when they made their call to him, kind of, you know, poking him a little bit, tickling the wire. I've learned would this be considered a tickling the wire, where they're just kind of poking a little bit, you know, shaking the wire? They say prosecutors said that he drove to Lake Elsinore and paid one of her classmates $1,000 to deliver a phone that he'd bought for her because her parents had taken hers. Well, that's the first thing in this story that we've heard of some sort of parental activity on her parents' part, of taking her phone away. But then he finds a way in. I mean, kids are crafty this way. This is not necessarily anything super unique. Kids do this sort of stuff a lot, not necessarily paying each other $1,000 to do it, but they find their ways around roadblocks. What does that tell you here about what is going on? And also, I guess, consciousness of guilt that he is looking at this and knowing that it's wrong. There's no argument here, I think, that's going to be made that he was unaware his youth was somehow preventing him from seeing it for what it was, as the adults in the room would.
You know, he was really pursuing her.
Yeah.
And that's where we see the breakdown, right? That I think she really thought they had a relationship and maybe we're going to get married someday, right? All of it's coming out. And then you see why the pinnacle of this relationship going to hell was essentially because she's scorned and she's hurt. And you see now all the layers that led up to her believing that she was loved and sought after by David. And then, you know, there's nothing worse than a woman's scorn, except for maybe David's scorn, because he certainly, you know, played that out. But you see what I mean? I mean, yeah. To me, it shows that he did all of this, and he's such a pedophile. I hope you can we say that?
Let's avoid it, but yeah.
Pedo. He's such a pedo. All that. Remember from the beginning, I said he's a pedo. Why? He's donned with Hello Kitty everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, he used all of the stuffed animals, the Hello Kitty. And then we found that video when she was only probably 5 or 6 and she had the Hello Kitty in with her parents in that living room. He absolutely was a groomer. And that's the sick side of this play out. Who else was he grooming?
That's going to be my next question. Do you think there's more people? Not that there's more deaths, but are there more victims that he was in a, and I put this in air quotes, relationship with? More, you know, obviously it's not a relationship when that's the dynamic, but he's convinced these girls that that's what it is.
Oh, I totally imagine that there are going to be multiple relationships, either online, in some process of being groomed. Remember, she talks about that too. She's jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Other girls. And I'm afraid we're going to find out they were girls, not women, but girls. We'll see.
Yeah. You know, Tony used an interesting word there. I'm curious if you think about it, Jen. about being wrong. Do you think he actually, at this point, because he fell in love with his own voice and he's surrounded by a bunch of sycophants, that he actually thought what he was doing was wrong?
So in my experience with interviewing, watching multiple interviews that were outside of what I interviewed, and sadly having to work this crap, which was, by the way, I begged not to, but you know, when you have a big, when people have a big case, you get roped into this crap.
Yep.
It's my least favorite. Nevertheless, these people, you cannot change them ever.
Right.
You can never change it. Just like you're never going to get turned on by that. They're never not going to be turned on by that, and nothing else, by the way. So it's not really that they drink their own Kool-Aid or they think they're right. They have no other, that's how they roll.
Right. So it's not even a choice of them of right or wrong. It just is, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And I saw someone in the chat use this instead of the word we were using that Tony's got scrub. We can call them PDFs.
PDFs. Yeah.
instead of pedos, they call them PDFs.
You know, I want to say this, and I don't really know what question I have with it, but I just want to point out the little factoid here. And I know it's probably going to, as it upsets people when, you know, you talk about certain other artists from history, that you look at the ages that they were at certain points in time and the people that they were with. Elvis was 24, Priscilla was 14.
Yep.
Different place and different time. Doesn't make it all that different, except she survived. I know we have Elvis fans here, but historically, I mean, there's a lot of this that has gone on. David is not that different in terms of the line of artists doing this with children. I'm not no way saying it's okay, but I do find it interesting the disgust that we have on this, and I find it utterly disgusting. But we look at it through a different lens today than we did back then. Obviously, a good thing, but is that part of why this still goes on today in these sort of circles, in this sort of environment where you have the artist with all the power? Is it still the same sort of dynamic that exists when you're behind that velvet curtain that allows this world to exist? It's not really all that different than it was decades ago.
Well, to your point, and I don't have my phone with me, so I don't have my stats right mm-hmm. here, but I've looked them up many times. There are many states where the age of consent is 14.
Yeah, you're right.
One where it's 13. This is just from my memory because I don't have my phone.
Sure.
13, several 14, many 15, multiples 16. How they try to cover with that, though, is they say, yeah, but it's only if it's a 13 with a 15-year-old, right? A 2-year age difference in terms of involved, not an adult, right? But nevertheless, to think that at 13 you can give consent is just mind-boggling. So, you know, Elvis probably lived in one of those states.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, when the public looks at it, you know, it's one thing, and then when it's so close in these circles, it's like, oh, that's what they do. And it seems like it's a different set of rules over there. Not that there really is, but until someone questions it,
so
it's caught.
Here's the breakdown.
Yeah.
30 states plus DC age is 16, 17 for 7 states, Colorado, Illinois, Louisiana, Missouri, New York, Texas, Wyoming, 18 for Arizona, California, Delaware, Florida. So the lowest is 16, and see this, you know, as soon as we started bringing up that age thing and how people in the celebrity circle sometimes mm-hmm. make these excuses for the way things used to be, and that's exactly what Epstein said too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
It's Robert, exactly what he said.
Couple things. One, are you looking at age of consent or
age
are
of
you?
Consent.
Okay. And if you're looking at age of consent, I would look back at when that changed, because there are, in other words, when it went from 13, 14, 15 up to 16 in different states.
Uh-huh.
I just remember doing that research, and I think you're going to see it's not that close, but I know Robin's
I'm checking it right now.
I guess like the question would be what's the motivating factor to not change it to higher numbers? Like why? Like,
I totally.
Well, just look at the morons running in government. Well,
that's probably our answer right there.
They don't want to trip themselves up.
I mean, it's because we've had children that age,
yeah,
right? And we know, I mean, they can't even drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By themselves. At 16, you can finally drive by yourself, with a license and so forth. But you know what I mean? They can barely, at least maybe it's just my kids, but I have a 17-year-old and I still make his pancakes every morning and maybe I'm coddling him. We do all his laundry, we do all that, but they seem to go off to college and they figure it all out. But you know what I mean? You see how they need guidance.
Yeah.
It's a lot earlier than at least what it's coming up with here. Exact timeline for California in particular. Age of consent was 10 years old until 1850. 1889, it raised to 14. 1897 went to 16. 1913, it went to 18.
Well, so they were early on it, I guess, compared to some other states. Haven't quite caught up.
And I see what these sick PDF guys are trying to do with this. Saying, "Oh, way back when it was this," and yeah, well, I'm reading a book on life in the Middle Ages right now in 1200 and 1300 in the UK, the United Kingdom, where they got married at 13 because everyone was dead by 40.
Thank you.
Yeah,
exactly. There were reasons for all of that, Yuval.
Yeah,
They actually gave command of armies. They gave commands of armies to 20-year-olds because everyone was dead by the older age.
And I can understand them, but back in the Elvis days, I just don't think things socially had caught up. I mean, they have, I think, a lot of ways socially, but like I said, they're still behind the scenes. That's the scary thing of the music industry, any industry that has essentially a firewall up in front of it. You find so many of these things going on, and it's so disturbing when you get a look behind the curtain like we're looking at right here.
I, and I'm sorry, Tony, for interrupting you. I think what's coming in here, kind of going back to your great point about what happened, what people accepted during Elvis' time and JFK and all these things, there used to be a celebrity halo that would carry people through this, that was just accepted. But there is no more celebrity halo. It's diminished a lot because of shows like this, because there's so much more transparency, required transparency. People are more critical thinkers in the general population. People question, why am I following this person? So I think because of all that, that celebrity halo is diminished, except the celebrities themselves don't realize it, and they get themselves screwed up because they're broken brain people.
In so many cases, and obviously they don't need to prove a motive here in this, but so many cases they strive for it because it certainly reads well with a jury. It helps make everything fall into place and make sense. This is a case where if the prosecution is accurate here and correct in what they're claiming David did, is pretty damn solid. The special circumstance allegation says Burke allegedly took Celeste's life because she was the witness to his own crimes that night. That she showed up at his house. They have evidence, they claim, that she threatened to expose him and expose their relationship. And he was about to launch an album and he was about to go on tour. And then she was dead. This seems like one of the strongest motives I've seen in any case. Jen, what's your thoughts on this and where this stands? Is all of this, when put together, I don't even know how this thing goes to trial or how they even attempt to take it to trial. What do you think on all that?
So this is my favorite question, Tony, that you just asked, because it parallels the Sandra Birchmore case.
Yeah,
federal government got their boot in the ground, boot in the door, and charged that because it was essentially murdering a witness. Mm-hmm. That's the statute that the federal government can get in on these local murders, one of the several. And mm-hmm. So in that case, it was charged all by the FBI, or not charged by the FBI, investigated by the FBI, charged by federal authorities. But again, that's because the locals wouldn't put their foot down on that case, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was, in other words, he killed her in this case also, if we're to believe the documents, because she was a witness to a crime,
mm-hmm.
her own crime, right? What happened to her? It's exactly parallels that case. The Bureau isn't going to enter the story here, I don't think, because, the state is coming down hard and fast on this one and has really done a great job, I think. But I think he's hosed and I think he'll plead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tony. Rob. So, you know, as we're going through this, you know, I'm actually getting misty thinking about this. I'm just thinking about her. And so if we're going through all these details and facts, you know, what really jumped out at me was how strong she actually was, because she didn't get trauma bonded to him. And the fact that she was able to do what she did, which put him into a fit of rage and a fit of fear, and he did what he did. Unfortunately, she lost her life, but she uncovered this. That'll never happen to anyone else again, thankfully. But I mean, it's pretty profound that as much as he roped her in and groomed her, that she maintained enough of her own individuality in some sense of whatever caused it, jealousy, whatever caused it. But again, she uncovered him. And unfortunately, she lost her life for it.
But yeah, did she uncover him or was going to uncover him? I still think it's just like in most of these cases we see, Sandra Birchmore and many others, where the woman is wants to go forward, and she uses that as a threat to keep the man, but she's never mm-hmm. really do it because keeping the man is more important. I think she was so naive. She didn't realize how pushing that major button put her life on the line.
I totally agree. Yeah. But again, but because of those actions, she uncovered him and lost her life for it. But again, innocent until proven guilty, but he will never do this to another human being again.
Yep.
True. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to work through the latest in this document in the David case. Blair Burke stood up at David Anthony Burke's arraignment and demanded a preliminary hearing within 10 days. She wanted the evidence in the light of day. She projected confidence. That was last week. This week, Burke's defense team asked the judge to push the hearing out to May 26. They said they needed more time to review the discovery. They also tried to get the prosecution's brief sealed. The judge said no, and that's what we're talking about now. Beth Silverman told the court she warned them this was coming. Something changed between the arraignment and that courtroom reversal, and whatever the defense says in those files, it was enough to make them pump the brakes. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, is joining me along with Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. Jen, the defense demanded that fast hearing and then asked for a delay less than 2 weeks later. Silverman told the judge she warned them about how much evidence was coming. What did the defense see in that discovery, you think, that made them change course so directly here? And I'm also wondering how much David's attorney knew of what was coming. I mean, without seeing the discovery itself, I'm wondering how forthcoming David might have been to his own defense. What are your thoughts?
Forthcoming, no. Probably mm-hmm. not a lot of time to debrief him for the defense. And when the defense saw what we're all looking at, plus a whole lot more, this was a total momentum switch. This is like, you know, you're down by 21 points in a football game and then they score 21 points and the whole thing blows up. That's what this reminds me of, total momentum switch, because they saw the overwhelming evidence for the first time.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Robin.
No, I just had a quick, easy one. I said, do you think there's any, what are the challenges, if any, do you think that the prosecution is going to have on this one?
You know, I think the only challenge is if they try to go for some sort of mental, that's all they got, right? They're going to do the same with Nick Reiner. That's all they have, and it's never going to work because he did things to show his consciousness of guilt, like those text messages that he sent out and all these things he did to cover up. It's never going to work because you can be wackadoodle, and as long as you know it's wrong, it doesn't.
For his circle that is around him on this one, assuming that at least some of them are witting of it, is there any kind of cooperation or level of cooperation they could give that would actually get them off? Or do you think they're all screwed that actually had conscious knowledge of this?
I don't think they're all screwed. I really don't. It depends on how much they were involved. We sort of talked about this, right? The low-hanging fruit, but you don't want to get a low-hanging fruit that was really deeply involved in this. But I tell you, from the details we're seeing in that document, I just will be surprised if there's somebody not cooperating.
Yeah, one more follow-up, Tony, sorry. Do you think because of who he is and what we've seen from his behavior, that he's the kind of guy that was blah, 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 blah to all his friends and associates about what was going on, what he was doing and everything, or do you think he kept tight lip about it?
Now, do you mean about what he did to her or about his pedo relationship with her?
I think one's going to lead to the other. Do you think he's the kind of guy that is like a look at me, look at me, look at me, that is going to sit? Because if you actually go into any kind of stressful situation like this and you have a tight circle of people that you're used to being transparent with and sharing a lot of details and information, it's going to be hard not to share, I would think. And so that kind of is a backdrop. Do you think he was that transparent with all his associates before this event? And do you think if he was, it would carry into this event? Or do you think he was able to lock it down?
I think he probably shared with one or two, particularly
Neo.
Neo is the one that I think he probably shared with. And I say that because, remember, he was immediately with him afterwards. We have all those pictures of them on the ground, high as a kite, you know, doing their thing together, literally right after this. And then we also have the flip of Neo, right? Initially in a way, avoiding having to testify. And then all of a sudden we see in social media, he says, you know, basically I'm bringing the thunder. And that, I think he knew.
Big behavior switches are always great indicators.
It makes you wonder about the when they drug Neo into questioning. It was a short questioning. It was like 40 some minutes compared to others that took days. And I think a lot of us were wondering, well, did he like take the fifth in all this, or did he just drop everything? Was it just like an explosion of information that came out in 45 minutes? They're like, okay, we got everything we need. You've pretty much told us everything, because they have so much in all of this. I'm also curious, a wiretap was brought up in this. Silverman told the court that investigators obtained that wiretap during the investigation. We don't have a lot of information, at least from what I recall in that document, that tells us exactly what was gleaned off of it. But what's your thoughts on that? I mean, how early on do you think they're tapping his phone, and what do you think they gathered out of the wiretap? Because I see a clear path as to where a lot of this other information came from. I'm not quite seeing yet, and maybe that's for court, those extras of what may have been taken from those wiretaps.
Well, a couple of things. When you're talking about a Title III over here investigation, they're the best. That evidence is irrefutable, because you're literally listening to somebody who has no idea you're listening to them. Mm-hmm. And all their secrets are coming out, and what they did and who he invited in. So it was brilliant for them to do it. And I think that tells you how little evidence they had at the beginning. They had probable cause to get the wiretap, but wiretaps are so hard to get. I mean, those Title III affidavits are, you know, 50 pages long. They're even worse than FISAs, because they are.
But so what did they have to walk into a judge with to get the wiretap on this for him?
You have to not only show, you have to show probable cause that you think they're even discussing that you're going to be able to glean information related to the crime, that they were involved in the crime, that they are using the instruments that you're trying to tap. Currently, you know, so you have to follow them around and make sure they're even using that phone. So you're taking what back in the day was pen register information, but real information showing that's them, because they call mama, they call best friend, they call their right to show that's even them, not only with the phone maybe assigned to them, but they're actually using that. So you have to go through a whole litany. If you say they live at this address, you have to cross-reference it with what document you have. It's like a major research paper that's dozens of pages long. Mm-hmm. And you have you hate them. It is the most intrusive warrant that we write as agents. FISAs are too, but I think FISAs, you get so much more, because you're talking national security. There's a bunch that's, you know, boilerplate that you throw in.
It depends if it's a U.S. person or not. If U.S. person, it's the same as a Title III, because you have to go through a huge amount of documentation, but you said there's a lot of boilerplate on that. But so here's the really great thing about this, though. If once you go through all the gyrations of getting that Title III up, and it takes months, it can take, because you got to wait for the returns on the pen registers to verify those addresses, to verify the phone numbers. It's laborious. There's tons of checks and balances. But because he's so prolific on his electronic media, I think the ability, I'm curious what you think, Jen, how many more Title III's you think they went up on because everyone's chatting. They've got all electronic devices. They got probably iPads. They got computers. They got all these other things. So I think once that one went up, because you have to constantly renew it and show that it's being active, that they're actually gaining intelligence. And based on that, they're able to kind of blossom it out. And then you got to have a whole team just to write friggin' Title III's. But do you think they're able to get more on it?
I wonder what more they went after. As you know, whenever the biggest part of once you get your Title III up is monitoring it, right? Mm-hmm. That's 24/7 coverage with an agent there listening. You're all on shift. And it's not just that. That's the easy part, right? Getting your T3 shifts. What the worst part is having your surveillance teams and all of your SWAT on standby and everybody else ready to descend when they hear something. Oh my gosh, he's going to go meet Neo. We need that covered. And you have that surveillance group that literally in almost real time is reacting. It is so heavy, labor intensive. It's really crazy.
I'm getting my PTSD from being in New York City and sitting on, I mean, I work counterintelligence in New York and I can't tell you a number of Title III's I sat on mob bosses. Just listening to wives conversations between other wives. And then you got to go through minimizations. It is people have no idea. So here's a good thing for people watching. You hear Jen and I talking. Our Constitution protects our rights so thoroughly that we hate doing these things because the Constitution makes it so thorough, so laborious, because it's such, as she said, it's such an intrusive technique. You have to show it's a progression, that you cannot progress this case and do the righteous work unless you use a more intrusive technique. And there's all these checks and balances along the way to do it. But the gold you can get, but the worst thing for a case agent, though, is if you go through all this laborious effort and they don't use that phone.
Yep. True. And when we're talking about a wiretap here, we're talking about two people at least on the call. We got David and there's somebody else for whatever reason that is. We don't know on exactly who's on the other end of the phone calls here with him. But those people, the other folks that are having the conversation that is being tapped, how are those folks being looked at right now? Are these folks who could also be in some trouble for having knowledge of whatever information they're trying to get? Or do these are these folks that are certainly going to be on the stand if a trial is to happen at some point down the line because, well, they have no choice but to tell their story because we already got you on tape?
Well, this is the thing. Did they aid and abet? Okay. That's the big charge you're looking for. And so, or did they obstruct in any mm-hmm. way? Did they talk about that? Did they go on and say, oh, don't worry, I lied to the police. I lied on the stand. So those are the kinds of charges that I would expect probably more predominantly than actually somebody who conspired with him and did overt acts to do this to her. Although, as I said, you would knock me over with a feather if not one other person was involved in some way. In other words, getting rid of the evidence or facilitating this horrific crime. But that's what the wiretaps can do. They can see if other people obstructed, and maybe nobody did. I mean, maybe he closed lip. We have to at least consider that. And to Robin's point about how every 10 days when you're up on one, you have to do a report, not to your boss, to the judge. And you have to go into the judge and you have to say, look at these 30 conversations. These were all related to the crime. Or you have to take it down. You can't, or criminal activity. You can't just keep wiretapping somebody forever. And by the way, when you're monitoring, so you're on there and all of a sudden David gets on with his mom and they talk about how his mom went to get her nails done and click. What she's doing for Susie, click. You have to, that's what you referred to as minimizing. You have to minimize the call because there's no criminal activity there and you have to judge that as an agent and click out. The judges get really mad when you're just want to listen to
They are not fishing expeditions. They're very specific.
But I guess my question to you guys is, I mean, conversations can change on a dime. I mean, how do you know when to listen back in? Without monitoring it. I mean, yes, spot checking, true. But like, is the tape rolling nonstop so you can go back to the tape and go, oh, we should have gone back to that part and heard that part? Or is it just kind of luck of the draw when you're spot checking back in to see if the conversation has changed?
It's you get decent at it. You can tell the people who are involved in the criminal activity as you listen to it and the people who aren't. And so typically, like, the moms aren't usually involved. But then, you know, we had that change of real estate, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So then that makes mom way more interesting now, where I'm going to be listening to what their conversations were. And then I also know, because I have historical vantage, right? I know if he called mom every day for, you know, all the time before this event, or he call her once every 5 months, and now he's calling her every day. So you look at those patterns, and then I'm spot checking often if I got mama with the real estate transactions and the different changes in when they're talking.
And then you're going to the judge and articulating that to the judge about why I'm actually going to be listening to mom. So that's why it's so laborious to do this.
There's obviously a no spousal privilege here for parents. It's a very real possibility that David's mother, his father, could be called to testify if this makes it to trial. Do they have anything they can do to not further incriminate their son, other than can they take the fifth on that and just not have any knowledge of what was going on, even though, you know, clearly maybe evidence shows they did?
They can take the fifth if they, you know, they can take the fifth. And then they can also just become hostile witnesses and not answer. They can lie. They can perjure themselves. So there's a lot of things that you'll see people do. Yeah. But they certainly, as you pointed out, they don't have privilege.
Yeah. If we're talking about somebody like aiding and abetting, you said, but what about just knowledge? I guess it probably depends what that knowledge is to a certain extent. But I guess knowledge of the relationship that it was a 13-year-old, that's one lane. The other lane would be knowledge that there's a body in his frunk, which I'm guessing a lot of people probably didn't know that part. But the 13-year-old part, the relationship part, obviously there are mandatory reporters in this world. They're typically, you know, teachers and therapists and people in certain positions of authority. It's not just, you know, the average Joe's not technically a mandatory reporter, but what about if that was revealed, is there any liability for anybody who had knowledge that this was a 20-some-year-old with a 13-year-old and they know that they're having this sort of relationship and they didn't report it? Is that a crime to not know that? Or to not report that?
It's a moral crime, but unless they are mandatory reporters, I don't believe it's a crime in California. What do you think, Robin?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm going to do it a double check right now. I think that's going to be the real stretch, is what's the culpability of the parents and those that were witty into the relationship. Because, I'm going to check it right now.
And that's the thing in so many of these cases where it's you have a lot of moral failures going left and right. And I think so many times we assume, like, moral failures have been litigated already and that there are laws for that level of a moral failure. But surprise, in many places, there's nothing for that sort of thing, unless one actually is a mandatory reporter. I'm wondering, I mean, if some of these things need to be changed in terms of responsibility and law, so it's not just get off the hook, that there is some responsibility for anyone who finds out that sort of information, that you too could be held liable in some way, shape, or form beyond just a slap on the wrist if you fail to report this sort of activity going on. Because if it's not for someone reporting it half the time, the abuse just goes on to infinity or a horrible conclusion like this. Robin, what'd you find?
Yeah, parents are not culpable. They're not mandatory reporters. Mandatory reporters in California Penal Code are teachers, school staff, coaches, doctors, nurses, therapists, clergy, with narrow exceptions, daycare workers, foster parents, social workers, law enforcement, firefighters, not parents.
Yeah. It's a lot of folks that are going to have to live with their decisions in this case, I think, for probably a long time. And and try to make some sort of peace with it. Fascinating conversation as always. Jennifer Coffendeffer, Break the Case on YouTube and wherever you get podcasts. Go search it. Go press subscribe. You've been digging a lot into Nancy Guthrie this last week. And that was actually originally going to be our lane of discussion today until all of this came out. But very, very fascinating. Go and check that out. And Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It is available wherever you get books. Go and get that. All right. Until next time, for Jennifer, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.